You're listening to the Liberty Grace Church Sermon Podcast. For more information, visit libertygrace.ca.
Have you ever heard a very impressive public speaker? I remember, I think I was maybe 12 or 13, and our youth group leader took me to, and I'm fairly sure it was Burlington or Oakville. And I remember being in the church. His name was Al Martin. I remember the verse, John 8. He spoke about you are of your father, the devil. And I think he spoke for 45 minutes, and he had me in the palm of his hand. I could have listened to him for easily another hour, and it would have been nothing. And I still remember that night, probably one of the most impactful sermons I've ever heard of. Actually, thinking about it this week, I looked him up. His name and the sermon, and it's online, so I plan to go back and listen to it. But I still remember that feeling of being there. Have you ever had that happen when you're there and somebody's speaking in such a compelling way that when they finish, you realize it's been maybe an hour, and yet it feels like it's only been 5 minutes. Or I think of another time. Charlene and I were at a conference together, and at the one evening, the guy got up and he made a pitch for a product that he was going to offer us. We were lucky he was going to offer us. But we had to decide immediately, and it was $10,000 US for information. For not like we weren't going to walk away with a car or anything like that, for information. And I remember that night, Charlene and I lying awake at night and talking, and it took everything. It to talk us both off the ledge. Now, you might call me a sucker, but Charlene is not a sucker. And it was hard for both of us to say, you know what, we're going to sit this one out. And the next day, all these people were like, we're in, $10,000 US, we're in. We didn't even have $10,000. It would have been, you know, from our line of credit. And it was like, hide your wallets, we're not going to do it. Now, looking back now, I'm so glad. I wonder how many of the people who actually bought in that day but regretted it later. But that is the power of a compelling speaker. If you saw The Darkest Hour last year, the film about Churchill, you realize that Churchill, I know, is kind of a controversial guy. He had, like every creature, every human being, had real strengths and real weaknesses. But you could argue the thing that kept Hitler from winning that war was the power of a strong speaker who could stand up and sway Parliament and sway the direction of the whole country by the very power of his words. Well, in the church that the letter that we just read was written to, there were some really powerful speakers within that church. And that is something that we can't really ignore. That is something that's powerful. We read in the chapter that we just read earlier in the chapter, they're actually called super apostles. That would be kind of like if somebody came in and said, hey, I know Daryl's your pastor, but I'm actually like a super pastor. You know, could you move out of the way? Because that's just an apostle. Like, I am a super apostle. And Paul, one of the things that they said about Paul is, Paul is not that impressive a speaker. They said, basically, you know, we're great. Paul is not great. Follow us and don't follow him. As looking at, a bit of research about who these super apostles were, around the 50s, they came in. They're just a traveling group of itinerant preachers. And they attacked Paul's credibility on a number of fronts. And perhaps the most devastating was this: his inability to communicate the gospel. Now, I want you to pause for a second and say, have you ever noticed, by the way, how God loves to pick the most unusual people? So God picks Moses. Do you remember what Moses, if you're familiar with the story, you remember what Moses said when God picked him to be the spokesperson? He said, I am not a good speaker. And God eventually got ticked with him. He's like, you know, you've got me. You don't need to be a good speaker. You've got God. So, you know, go for it. And now here is Paul, and we're going to look at this. Paul had a lot to boast about, but for whatever reason, He wasn't as impressive, as slick a speaker, intentionally or not, as these guys were. And they were like, move out of the way. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because I don't know what it is with you. I don't know what it is with me. Actually, I think I do know what it is with me. But all of us have something that we cling to, where we say, that is the thing that makes me matter. You know, that is the quality or the characteristic that is really impressive. A few years ago, I was in New York City, and we were on holiday, and we got to go to Redeemer and hear Tim Keller preach. And I still remember Tim Keller unpacking this whole idea of what these people were doing, which was really boasting. And he said this, in ancient times, boasting was a ritual before you engaged in battle. Boasting was part of a ritual warfare in ancient times. And so here's the thing. If you're going into battle, if you're going into war, you're about to like maybe be killed. And somebody gets up there, and what are you going to say to motivate people on the way to being possibly killed? Well, you're going to boast. You're going to say things like this. By tonight, the king's head is going to be on my banner stand. And everyone go, roar! And everyone would be like, we're going to, you know, take those people. We're going to wipe the ground with their, you know, skins. Or, I don't know, something really creepy. Like, everyone would go, yeah, we're going to go kill them. And it would be this form of boasting. And Tim Keller, he says, if you look through history, there's all these different versions of boasting in all these different nations. And it's the same with us. That we think that there's something that we cling to that's going to give us meaning or strength, whatever it is. If we have that, then it's going to make us feel worthwhile and other people bad. And this is what he says. He says, the whole idea behind these ritual boasts is, we can do it. We can get it. We're strong enough. We're good enough. And what God says is the problem with the human heart is this. That if you look at your beauty, if you look at your smarts, if you look at your talent, if you look at anything good within yourself, your achievements, and you say, I did that, then you begin to take credit for it. You begin to see that as your accomplishment. They're gifts from God. You were born with the beauty. You were born with the skills and the talents. They're gifts from God, but you take credit for it. That is the very nature of the human heart. But yet it's within us all to boast in something. If you have money, you boast in money. If you have athleticism, you boast in that. If you have beauty, smarts, whatever, you say that this makes me worthy of applause, of accolades, of cheering. That is why I am worthy of praise. This is my glory. This is who I am. This is my significance. This is my value. This thing, I have accomplished this. This is mine. And it's in this context that Paul is going to speak to us today with incredibly important but incredibly difficult to understand words. What Paul is going to say today goes, it cuts completely against the grain of the way we normally think. And so today I want to look at what Paul says, which is really addressing this issue, not just within the church, but within all of our hearts as well. And here's what we see. We've seen we all boast in something. And here's what Paul says. The Corinthians were the super apostles were boasting in something. That these were great speakers. And the Corinthian church was like, we buy in. These are impressive people. And this is what Paul says. Okay, a couple things. First is this. Boasting is really stupid. Okay. Here's where he says in verse 15, Jim read it for us. It's amazing how many times he uses this phrase in this passage, foolish. Okay. I repeat, let no one think me foolish. But even if you do, accept me as a fool so that I may boast a little. What I am saying with this boastful confidence, I say not as the Lord would, but as a fool. And he goes on in verse 19, he says again, fool. In verse 21, he says again, I'm speaking as a fool. Look, if Paul wanted to brag, and he's going to do a little bit of bragging here, Paul is going to establish his credibility and go directly against these people who are boasting in their strength. But if Paul's going to brag, he says this, I want you to understand that as I'm bragging, I'm speaking as a fool. I am being an idiot right now. It is the stupidest thing in the world to boast about my accomplishments. Now here's what Paul could have said, okay? He could have said this, I've established more churches than anybody else. I preached the gospel in more lands and to more ethnic groups. I've overcome my racial prejudice, and as the most Jewish of Jews, I am an apostle to the Gentiles. I have traveled more miles. I've actually won more converts. I've written more books. I've raised more money for the gospel. I have dominated more councils. I've walked with God more fervently and seen more visions. I've commanded the greatest crowds and performed the most spectacular miracles. Paul could have said, one time I was speaking to a hostile crowd, and the whole thing had to be shut down because the people thought I was a god. Okay. Paul could have said all of these things. Paul could have said, because as a Pharisee, he would have memorized the whole Hebrew scriptures. Paul could have said, I've memorized the whole written Bible up to that point. Paul could have done all of that more, and yet he doesn't, because he says it's foolish. And so here, the thing we're going to see, and this is only going to make sense if we get this, is you have all kinds of reasons to boast. Looking at each of you, now I know most of you who are here, the thing about being in a smaller church like this is I know most of you fairly well, at least well enough to know, I think, what the things are that you bring. And here's the thing. I could go around, and you might be shy to say it, but I could point out with most of you what there is that you have to boast about. And Paul says, it is foolish. Don't do it. It is stupid. Beware the weakness of your strength. When you put your faith in your strength, in your talents, you're putting your weight on something that is foolish, and it will disappoint you. It is stupid, even when you have as much to boast about as Paul does. And so don't do it. You know, he says that these people are boasting. In verses 16 to 18, he begins to describe, well, verses 19, he talks about these fools that were boasting. And here's the crazy thing that was true of them. You know, they were skilled leaders, and they had good track records. They were award-winning public speakers. But he goes on and he says, you know, look at the full picture of these guys. They're robbing followers of their freedom. They're exhibiting, they're exploiting followers and their resources. They're taking advantage of people, and they have abusive tendencies and actions. These people who are boasting, if you saw the whole picture, you would realize that there's really not a lot of stuff worth boasting about there. They might be impressive speakers, but man, does it ever run short. And so Paul says, boasting is stupid. Boasting is idiotic. Just don't do this. Okay, so that's what Paul says about that. And then here, what is the alternative? Beware the weakness of strength. Paul makes a surprising turn, and we're going to look at this not just today, but next week as well. Because this really gets to the heart of 2 Corinthians. I think if we get this, we've gotten the primary message of this book. What Paul says then is, the only thing worth boasting about is our weakness. The only thing worth boasting about is in our weakness. Verse 21, Paul says this, whatever anyone dares to boast of, and he says again, I'm speaking as a fool, I dare to boast of that. Are they Hebrews, these super apostles? Paul says, I am too. Are they Israelites? Paul says, so am I. Are they the offspring of Abraham? He says, so am I. Are they servants of Christ? I'm a better one. And Paul's getting really uncomfortable. He interjects and says, I'm talking as a madman now. Paul's saying, look, this is a game that I hate to play. This is ridiculous. The very fact that you're making me recount my qualifications to brag about myself, you're making me into a madman because this is stupid. If I put my weight on any of these things, it's just foolish. And so Paul makes a turn at that point. And Paul begins to list all the things that he's been through. And what he lists are things that are his suffering. He says, and this is his hardship list. At the beginning of Corinthians, he talks about how he was so beat up by his persecutions that he despaired of life itself. And later on in a few chapters, I think it was chapter 4, he describes some of his hardships. And in this passage, he begins to list them again. You know, labors and imprisonments and beatings and often near death. 5 times he received at the hand of the Jews 40 lashes less one. The 40 lashes, 39 lashes, were basically designed to get you to the point of death without actually killing you. And so if you can picture, the 39 lashes were designed basically to, you know, how much can we punish somebody without actually killing them? For most of us to receive the 39 lashes one time, most of us would say, like, we're done, okay? We've suffered for Jesus now. Surely God could not ask me anymore. And yet he says, I received this 5 times. Beaten with rods 3 times. Stoned, shipwrecked, adrift at sea, and frequent journeys in danger from everyone. In toil and hardship, through many a sleepless night, and hunger and thirst, often without food and cold and exposure. And I love how he ends there. On top of that, apart from these other things, there is the daily pressure of the anxiety for all the churches. And I want you to get that, okay? So Paul is, you know, he's escaping for his life. Or maybe he's, like, recovering. By the way, Paul, they say, all these beatings would have been so hard on his body that every day when he woke up, he would be in constant physical pain. There was not a day, because of all these sufferings, that Paul did not wake up and just go, my body is killing me. And Paul says, if you can picture, you know, he's on the run again, or he's just broken out of jail again. And he says, the thing that's maybe on me the most is I'm worried sick about how the Corinthians are doing. You know, I'm worried sick about, you know, how's the Thessalonian church doing? When a person in any one of the churches is in need, or when he hears about a church beginning to go astray, or he hears about the super apostles in this church, he's burdened. All those needs in these churches affect him, and he's aware of and attentive to these needs. And what Paul is saying here is, look, what am I going to boast about? I'm actually not going to boast about the things that I have going for me, but I'm going to boast about my weaknesses. I'm going to boast about my sufferings. Those are the things that give me credibility, that mark me as a follower of Jesus Christ. Beware the weakness of strength, he's saying, and embrace the strength of weakness. I want to just, this is basically the whole biblical content we're going to look at today. If you understand this, you understand the passage. What I want to spend the rest of our time doing is just thinking about this. You know, why would this be the case? If I were to approach you and say, like, what do you have going for you, right? What if you said, man, like, let me begin to tell you about my weaknesses. Let me begin to tell you about my struggles, my doubts, the things that, just my awareness of sin. Why would we do this? One reason is this. Who do we follow? Jesus. What was Jesus like? What was his ministry characterized by? And here's the thing about Jesus. Isaiah said it very well. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him. No beauty that we should desire him. You know, there was nothing. If you saw Jesus, there was absolutely nothing about his appearance that would have drawn you to him. we're taking pictures today. Simon is, thank you for coming today. If you see Simon going around and taking pictures, he's helping us out because we need more pictures for our website. And he's been kind. Woody did it last week. I did it the week before that. So we're getting, now we've called in the professional. So, you know, if Jesus were here in the flesh and Simon were running around taking pictures, Isaiah tells us basically, you know, there might be a lot of really good looking people here, but Jesus is not the one that the camera would be drawn towards. There was nothing really impressive about the way that Jesus looked. It wasn't like if you put Jesus on your website that everyone would go, like, look at that. Like, that is easy on the eyes. We need to go to that church because look at him. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. You probably know Jesus didn't win a lot of popularity contests. I mean, every time he did, Jesus made a point of ticking everybody off. Every time he started to get too many followers, Jesus was like, did I talk to you guys about like eating my flesh and drinking my blood? Like, have we had that talk yet? Have we had that talk about, like, if you're going to follow me, you've got to leave everything? And people come to him like, I just got to bury my dad. He's like, your dad can bury himself. You know, Jesus was despised and rejected. By the time he died, just a handful of people followed him, mostly women. And just a handful of people, even his followers, turned their back on him. As one from whom men hid their faces, he was despised, and we esteemed him not. Who do you follow? You see, Jesus said, if they hated me, they're going to hate you. I think the other thing that the reason why Paul was ready to boast in his weaknesses, he says, because, you know, I want to live like Jesus. I want my life to be characterized so that just as Jesus was despised, I'm so committed to following him that I'm okay with being despised myself. You know, the other thing is this. Paul captured something that was much more valuable to him than the acclaim of people, and that was Jesus. Paul, although he had all these things to brag about, he said, the thing that I cling to the most for meaning is that Jesus loves me. And I'll cling to that. I'll cling to the beauty of Jesus. I'll cling to what Jesus thinks of me more than what everybody else thinks of me. Yesterday, I don't know if you ever have this experience. I'm sure you do. I was having a really good day. Better than average. I got more done. I had more fun doing it. Got to the end of the day. I was feeling pretty good about myself. I cleaned the whole house. I did my expense report. I made soup from scratch for my family. I was having a very good day. And you're laughing because you know where this is going, don't you? I was patting myself on the back. And near the end of the day, I just lost my temper and completely blew it. And I ended the day. It was nothing major. We kind of made up for it and everything. Josiah and I are okay now. He's forgiven me. He even explained to me the difference between I accept your apology and I forgive you. I didn't know there was a difference between the two of those. And I went to bed last night thinking this. If I had based who I am on the kind of day that I had, I would be feeling good about myself all day long until I hit that point where I completely blew it. And then I would have been completely demolished because at that point my standing went from being up here to being down here. And I was thinking of this as we sang. Steffi, thank you for leading us through the songs that we sang. We sang the song about missing not one, about the love of Jesus Christ. And as we sang that, I was like, man, the perfect love of Christ that covers, he's not missing any one of our faults. You see, Paul got that. And Paul was saying, I am able to boast in my weaknesses because my weaknesses are the doorway to finding my need of Jesus Christ. And that is worth far more than anything else. And when the Corinthians beat up on Paul, they were beating up on the very qualities that made him a good leader. They were beating up on the very qualities that he picked up from Jesus. And it's stupid to boast about our strengths. when the very thing that we should be boasting about, if we're forced to, is giving up our lives for God's glory and for the good of others. And so let me bring this home. What is it that you boast in? And I want you to actually think about that. What is it that you put your hope in? What is it that you look to? And when you meet that standard, or when you cling to that, you feel good about yourself. There's a fundamental conflict between what you value and what God values. Because what God values today is your weakness. What God values today isn't your education or your wealth or your accomplishments. What God values more than anything is your humility and your weakness and your awareness of your need of Him. It's how we are saved. And here's how we know when we've understood the gospel. When we've stopped boasting about our strengths. When we start embracing our weakness. When we're humble. And when we're ready to serve. When we realize the very thing that God may use most powerfully in our lives isn't our strength, but is actually our suffering. I think it was Wednesday, and I was finishing the sermon, and I was like, okay, the only thing I've got to figure out now is how to, what closing story can I find? And I started making dinner. I put on an audiobook, and Eugene Peterson's The Pastor was the audiobook I happened to be listening to. And I was listening to it, and it's like, this is it. This is exactly what I've got to close with. So Eugene Peterson one day, an old pastor, was one day asked by a couple, what is your favorite thing about pastoring? What is your favorite thing about pastoring? And he thought about it for a minute, and it was, at one time he answered, my favorite thing about pastoring is the mess. Okay, so, which is a pretty good answer, actually. But then he said, you know, my favorite thing about pastoring isn't when I'm in front of everybody and everybody's noticing me. But he said this is my favorite thing about pastoring. You are at your pastoral best when you are not noticed. To keep this vocation happy, he says, requires constant self-negation, getting out of the way. And he was talking to the couple that asked that question. He says it kind of blew their minds. He kind of figured, you know, that his pastoral favorite things would be when he was up in front of everyone and everyone was noticing what he did. He says most of what a pastor does, nobody even knows about, right? 6 days of the week, nobody even knows what you're doing, which is why everyone says, oh, it must be nice to work 1 hour a week. And he says this was new territory when he said, you know, my best pastoral moments are when I'm out of the way and when I'm not noticed. And he says the three of us discussed that for the next hour, how a clamoring ego needs to be purged from the pastor's soul. And he says, from every Christian soul for that matter, but pastors are at special risk. And I want to close with this, because this is what he says. It's so important. We are at our best when we get out of the way, when we're not noticed, when we purge the clamoring ego from our soul, when we embrace our weakness, when we serve Jesus. We're at our best when we get out of the way, when it's all about Jesus and not about us. When the very thing we bring to God is not how qualified we are, but how needy we are. So beware of the weakness of strength. Embrace the strength of your weakness. And so, Father, forgive us for thinking that we bring anything to you. Lord, forgive us for thinking that we're strong in the first place. I think that you laugh at us. Whenever we bring our resume to you of strengths and accomplishments, the things we're trusting in, Father, the only reaction is for you to call us fools. The amazing thing about your kingdom is you've set it up so that when we come to you with need, that you meet that need. Lord, when we come to you with weakness, you promise to use that weakness. And so, Lord, we come with nothing but need today. Lord, in half an hour, we're going to come to the table and we're going to confess that we're sinners. And we're going to come crawling. Nobody can strut up to that table. And Lord, the very posture of coming in weakness and humility is the path to blessing. And so, Father, my prayer for all of us today is first that we would bow before the cross of Jesus and acknowledge our need of Him. My prayer is that all of us here today would create such a church culture that when we come into this church, we would not be talking about what we bring in terms of strength. I pray instead that our church culture would be what we bring in terms of our need. Father, would you create this church so that it's a place where we can come and admit our mental health struggles, where we can come and talk honestly about our depression, our anxiety, our sexual temptations, our anger. Lord, would you make this a church where we can come and admit our needs and realize that this doesn't disqualify us from your grace. This is the very way that we receive your grace. I pray that within this community, that when people think of this church, they would think of this as being a place where grace is given to weak and struggling people. Father, I pray that whenever we begin to get too big for ourselves, whenever we begin to brag about our accomplishments, would you remind us of our weakness and drive us again to Jesus? So Lord, hear our prayer. For some reason, even though we have little reason to be proud, we struggle with pride. May we beware the strength or the weakness of our strengths. Instead, Lord, would we embrace the strength of our weakness. And would that drive us to the cross? We pray in Jesus' name.